Okay.
All right, today is October the 9th, 2012. This is Steve Labruda. I'm a graduate student at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm in the H.J. Letcher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports. And as a part of the 1968 U.S. Olympic Team Oral History Project, I'm interviewing Dr. John Nelson over the phone about his experiences in the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. Just want to start out, Doc, by talking to you about your childhood and everything else, and we'll just go ahead and go through the history that brought you up through the 68 Olympics. You were born in Chicago, right?
Correct.
Okay, great. What was your childhood like? Do you have brothers, sisters, family?
I'm an only child. And my father was a carpenter, and my mother ran her father's business until he retired, and then my entire family moved to Florida. I started swimming when I was very young. We lived just a couple of blocks away from the local municipal pool, and I was in my first race at age 4.
Wow.
They gave me a medal. I was 4 out of 4. However, that didn't deter me. I did skip the next year and then swam again in the six-member competition. This was the Lions Olympics. The Lions, local Lions Club held a meet at the end of every summer for all the kids, and that was my competition. There were very nice local teams there. Every little township, Prospect, Arlington Heights, all had their own little municipal swimming teams, and we'd take buses and go compete against them. So, and that was really quite lovely right from the beginning. And when we moved to Florida, that's when I started to actually swim a little bit more in earnest. I was about age 10. At age 12, I was I had 14 national age group first places and 8 national age group records. At age 14, I was the age group swimmer of the year. At age 16, I was at my first Olympic team, and at age 20, I was on my second Olympic team.
That's what part of Florida did you guys move to?
We lived in Pompano Beach on the east coast, which is just a little bit north of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it well. I've got uncle actually in Hollywood, so I know the area.
Yeah, trained in Hollywood sometimes. They had a saltwater pool there.
Oh wow!
They let us from 6 to 9 a.m.
Now, did you just enjoy swimming, or obviously you liked competing. Where do you think you got that from? Were either of your parents athletes or anything?
No, they were actually sort of astonished by the fact that I did so well. They were terribly pleased that I wasn't a juvenile delinquent.
Outstanding. What did you like best about the swimming, if you recall?
Winning.
Winning. Outstanding. Outstanding. You ended up going to Yale. Were you on a swimming scholarship there, or no. Did you just go academics?
The Ivy Leagues at that time did not have or allow athletic scholarships. I had a partial need scholarship, but the remainder was grants and loans.
Wow.
The nice thing about Yale was that, if you got there and decided you didn't want to swim, your financial package was completely unaffected.
Wow.
Those were the old days. It was really quite interesting. My daughter has sort of come up as a volleyball player, and When I was in college, anybody who wanted to be on the team showed up for practice. And you were on the team if you came to practice, and you got to compete. Depending on the meet, if there was a risk of losing the meet, then usually the less proficient swimmers might not get a chance to compete. But everybody who showed up got to compete. And I was really kind of horrified to discover the student athletes that exist now and how they're picked years in advance.
Yes.
And that, my daughter could walk on, but the team was already full for the following 2 years. So what was the point? I found that somewhat discouraging.
Sure. Sure. Where'd your daughter go?
She started off at the University of Portland and subsequently transferred to Portland State University.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. When you were competing, did your high school have a swim team, or did you just do AAU kind of stuff?
No, both. I know we had a had a very good swimming team. I think we were the state champs the 3 years I was there.
Wow.
Senior high. It was a very large high school. There were 800 kids in my class alone.
Wow.
High school was only sophomore, junior, senior in those years, and there was almost 3,000 kids in three classes.
Yes, sir.
A lot of depth.
Absolutely, gosh. How was your coaching? Do you remember your coaching, or was it more natural ability? Obviously, you were pretty quick in the pool.
Now we had my high school coach, and actually my AAU coach was Bob Owsley, and he helped enormously. Though probably my best coach was my father. He was a very quiet man, but and he spent most of his time observing. But when he had something to say, it was worth listening to.
Outstanding. So you got a lot of encouragement, obviously, from your parents competing and swimming, correct?
Correct.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about how you got to your first Olympics, and then we'll have a whole conversation about the 68 games, your second Olympics. So how did obviously you won a couple of national championships in the trials to get to the Tokyo games?
The way to get on the team was not through the nationals. There was a separate Olympic trials, and you had to get into the top three at the Olympic trials. I mean, I don't think the Olympic trials were open to non-U.S. citizens as opposed to the nationals, which were. So we had people from Japan, Australia, and whatnot in the national championships that weren't at the Olympic trials, and to get onto the team, you had to be in the top three in any given event to go to the Olympics in 1964.
Wow. Wow. Where were the trials held that year?
New York City.
New York City, wow. How was it traveling to the Northeast? You were only 16, so...
Correct.
All right. How was that? How was that experience for you?
Well, it was good, but you've got to remember that we did a lot of traveling before that. We would go all the way up to Atlanta for meets from South Florida. So the idea of traveling wasn't particularly new. The idea of hanging out with a team, staying at the hotel, being in a new environment wasn't terribly new.
Right, absolutely. Did your parents go to the meets and things like that as well?
certainly when I was swimming age group, when I got to be in college, they couldn't really afford to go. You know, there were a lot of places that were, you know, a long way from Florida, and my father's salary didn't cover too many of those.
Sure.
So they never got to go to either Olympics.
Ah, that's too bad. So how did they react when you qualified to go to the Olympics?
Well, my mother had reservations about letting me go because I was so young. My father managed to talk her into that, though I didn't hear about that until I was probably in my 30s. I didn't know I would do that my mother was thinking about refusing permission for me to go. And there were younger women than that on the team that were going, so it was really kind of not a reasonable thing to refuse. So.
Sure.
That was another story. My father seemed to very quietly manipulate the people around me. He kept everybody off my back. I don't know exactly how he did that. I know my coach in high school, Bob Alford, was just violently opposed to my surfing. I used to love to surf in Florida.
And
he never really said much about it. And I kind of found out later how he wanted to, you know, protect his athlete from injuries. But my father never let him get away with that. He let me go surfing. You know, he kind of gave me my head and trusted my judgment and made sure that nobody was bugging me. I still don't understand how he did that.
He obviously trusted your judgment. That's outstanding. Did you, besides swimming and surfing, did you get into any other athletics, sports?
I played water polo.
Oh, did you?
Late. You know, they put me in when they wanted to run the other team into the ground. Not because I could shoot.
Good. Okay, let's talk about after your first Olympics, you're graduating from high school, and then you're applying to like Yale. Where else did you apply to go to school?
You know, I think I applied to University of Michigan, USC. Indiana University. I don't think I bothered to apply to University of Florida. Tennessee was up and coming, and they, you know, contacted me, but they wasn't really interested in going there. You know, those were interesting times. USC offered me the room, board, books, tuition, fees, and laundry money. And the laundry money included a car to get me to the laundromat.
Wow.
University of Mississippi offered me a scholarship for me and my friend. Indiana University offered not only my undergraduate education, but my medical school education as well. And all of these were completely illegal. And I'm sure they're still doing that stuff now.
Wow. Wow, that is amazing. You're not the first Olympian to tell me about stories like this.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Statute of limitations from 68 are kind of run out, I think. But but it's absolutely, it's interesting to know. Okay, what made you decide Yale? You wanted to go to med school the whole time?
No, I didn't really want to go to medical school until I was a senior in college. I spent a summer working for Monsanto, a chemical company. I was a chemistry major.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized that I really didn't want to work for a large company like that. I mean, they sent me to Decatur, Alabama, which was probably not one of my favorite places that I ever lived.
Yes, sir.
And the kind of people, the hierarchy was something that I really didn't care for. And that was when I started casting around looking for something to do. I knew that I was not particularly good at research or academics, and I knew that I wouldn't make a good academic chemist. I didn't want to stay, you know, as a university professor. So the next logical thing seemed to be medicine, which I found fascinating and still do.
Outstanding, outstanding. So what made you decide on Yale? You had all these other schools wooing you. What turned your head to Yale?
Well, they had a fabulous swimming team at the time, and it was also one of the best schools in the country. So that's what got my attention.
Good. And obviously your grades were pretty good. It's I imagine even then it was pretty tough to get into Yale.
Yeah, I was third in my high school class of 800.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
You know, when I got there, 50% of my college class had either been valedictorian or salutatorian of their high school class.
Wow.
I found it to be very fast company. I've been an academic scar, and all of a sudden I was, you know, average. It was a bit of a shock.
I bet, especially as competitive as you are.
Yes.
you're a freshman. You're going to Yale. Are you swimming for Yale?
Oh yes.
Okay. Well, tell me about what kind of training you did before the 68 Olympics. What were your days like?
Oh, the training before 68. I actually trained at Arden Hills. The summer of 68 with Sherm Chevreau. That was Mike Burton and John Ferris and Susie Myers, and there were a few others that were, you know, world-class competitors at the time. And at that point, we were swimming about 4 hours a day. We'd swim 8 to 10, and then 4 to 6, and we were doing between 11 and 13,000 meters a day.
Wow. Wow.
Well, you know, years after that, they upped the ante to people doing about 6 hours a day in the water and three workouts and doing up to 20,000 meters a day, which, you know, I think they've backed off a little on that, but they've changed things around to using more cross-training, more weights and that sort of thing, which I think is probably what's contributed more to the drop in times than anything.
Wow, that's amazing. And since you medaled in Tokyo, was that a big boon to in your enthusiasm to keep going?
Oh yes, I had a fifth in the 400 and a second in the 1500 in Tokyo.
Yeah. Did you swim anything else besides freestyle?
Not in the games.
Yeah.
I had always dabbled in just about anything else. I mean, I still remember one time in high school, there was a fellow there named Mike Sheeler, who was the premier breaststroker.
Uh-huh.
Which was that actually my worst stroke. But, you know, just for chuckles, I had my coach put me in a 200-meter breaststroke, which was actually a 220-yard breaststroke. That particular race was at the casino pool in Fort Lauderdale with the salt water.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was really kind of astonished by the amount of interest that drew from the crowd. You know, they stuck me over in lane one. of the last heat because I didn't have any kind of qualifying time. And Shuler was in lane four because he was the, you know, favored. And I almost won that race. He touched me out at the end. But I still remember about halfway through, you know, sticking my head up to breathe, and all of a sudden I heard this gigantic roar from the crowd. And I kind of looked around, and everybody there was on their feet, you know, hanging on by the edge of the pool. I think they wanted to see me get beaten. Nobody really beat me very often in South Florida. You know, I did that previously, too. I mean, I remember in a high school meet, I had my coach put me in the 100 fly. And, you know, and there was a guy named Kurt Chambers there. And he said, you know, Chambers will be in that. And I said, yeah, I know. Well, that one I did win. I dropped my time, you know, my best time by about 4 seconds.
Wow.
After that. So, yeah, I, you know, I would dabble in other things. I would have made a good individual medalist throughout that on my best trip.
Outstanding. Okay, so you're putting in a lot of time in the pool, and obviously you're taking classes. You're competing against some of the best in the world. Were your grades okay?
Yeah, I graduated in the middle of my class, and I'm damn proud of it.
They still call you doctor, right?
Well, yeah. You know, medical school after Yale was really easy.
Interesting.
Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
I think my wife is trying to call me, but she'll just have to pitch.
If you need to get that, I can give you a call back.
Oh no, my wife and daughter are going up to the Chinese garden so she can take photographs.
Oh,
beautiful.
Oh, beautiful.
But they don't need me for that.
Okay, so you're going to Yale. You're training for your second games. Where were the Olympic trials before the 68?
Those were in Long Beach.
Long Beach, right. And how'd you do? Obviously, you qualified, but how was that experience going there?
It was nice. You know, it was a very, very nice pool, very nice venue. And, again, it wasn't something I hadn't done before, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I qualified in the 200 to 400 and 1500 for that particular game.
Right. Is it old hat by then, or were you excited to be Olympian again?
It's never old hat.
Outstanding. And did you go right from Long Beach to Colorado Springs to train?
As I recall, yeah.
Okay. And how was that experience being at the academy?
Lovely. We actually slept in some cabins up at around 11,000 feet to try to get acclimatized to the altitude.
Right. Before you headed down to Mexico City, did you have any reservations about going to Mexico City?
Well, the altitude was a concern for all of us, but the fact that it was a third world country. And after the Japanese games, which were just beautifully run, I still remember talking to Chet Jastrzemski, who was on 60, 64, and 68 games. And I remember he was saying to me about, you know, we remember what 64 was like, and this kind of suffers by the comparison. But, you know, the rest of the team seems to be having a real good time.
Did it help that you were 20 years old instead of 16?
I think so.
Yeah. And did you have to unenroll from Yale to do this?
Yeah, I had to take a semester off. Yeah. I had too many courses like physical chemistry and whatnot that I couldn't really keep up with. Now another guy on the team, Dave Johnson, he was an alternate. He was from Yale, and he actually kept up with his studies as a biology major. I don't know how I managed to do that.
Wow.
We never saw him much. I think that's why, because he was off grinding it out.
Right. And before heading down to Mexico City, do you remember anything about hearing anything about the Olympic Project for Human Rights and the Harvard Crew letter?
I do not.
Okay. Do you remember anything about planned boycotts or anything like that for human rights going down to Mexico City? Okay. Cool.
No, I don't remember any of that. You know, later, but not for 68.
Right, absolutely. Okay, talk about going down to Mexico City. How early did you guys head down? I know the divers were down almost a month before the game started.
I think we got there about a week before, but I don't exactly remember.
That's okay. Do you remember the accommodations, where they put you up and everything like that? What were your impressions of Mexico City?
Well, where they put us were brand new apartments that had just been constructed. They really weren't quite finished when we moved in. The amount of dust and dirt from the construction was considerable. And, you know, they had apartments, you know, living room, bedroom, kitchen, whatnot, that they just threw a bunch of cots into. And we had, I think, two keys for our apartment, and there were about probably 8 or 10 of us in there.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, people would come back at varying times, so the room ended up being left open, and the theft rate was horrible.
Wow.
Yeah, and people were losing things left and right. The Japanese games were the opposite of that. We were on an ex-U.S. military base, so it was a giant, you know, chain-link fence around the place with guards at every entrance, and you could, you know, probably leave your wallet in the dining hall and come back and get it the next meal without losing anything there, but not in Mexico.
Wow. How were the pools, the facilities?
They were, I'd have to say, by American standards, a little crude. You know, the fit and finish wasn't particularly good, but it was adequate.
Yeah. What about the food? I know you guys could eat all you wanted. Was it worth it?
Oh, it was adequate. You know, it was fuel.
Yeah.
That was sort of all we were worried about.
Sure.
You know, there was a fair amount of people getting Montezuma's Revenge there.
Right.
Yeah, I remember Steve Rarick couldn't even compete because he'd been sick for several days.
Oh, wow. Do you remember the opening ceremonies of the games?
Oh, yeah.
Did you participate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about it. Was it impressive? Did you like it?
Well, you know, it's very different from what happens nowadays. You know, the only part of the opening ceremonies that we had was where, you know, marched in, and they had a few speeches, and then you marched back out. You know, they released the balloons and the doves, and I was really grateful for the people who remembered to bring newspaper, so that when they released the doves, you could shield yourself a little bit from them. But, you know, the opening ceremonies were really kind of, you know, tension-filled for everybody. You know, that's just the beginning of the, you know, greatest athletic competition that almost everybody there would ever see. And so people were, you know, I think, understandably tense. You know, you're looking down the barrel of the biggest competition of your life.
Right. Right.
The closing ceremonies were a little different.
It's more of a party.
It was.
Outstanding. Were your events right at first, or when were your swimming events?
I think it was about a weekend. And I had 7 straight days of competition now, which, you know, you look at what they do nowadays, like, I found by the 7th day, I just swam to finish.
Yeah.
I had the final for the 1500 on my 7th day, and I, you know, qualified, but I just got in, swam 30 laps, and got out and took 8th place.
Right. Well, since you did training in Colorado Springs, was the altitude any problem for you at all?
No more than anybody else. You know, the times were slower for, you know, the middle distance and distance events. They weren't terribly different for sprints. You know, and that stands to reason, because in most of those you go anaerobic and then you're done. And it's only in the longer events that the oxygen consumption matters more.
Yes, sir. Did you have any buddies that you hung around with on the team or anything like that? Did you get close with any of the other swimmers or athletes?
You know, I have to say, you know, Mike Burton was probably one of the people I was most friendly with. I was always incredibly impressed by Mike. He was a guy with relatively ordinary talent, but astronomical drive.
Wow.
You could, when he swam, he had one speed, and it was wide open. His time for the 400 free was the same as his time would be for the first 400 on the way to the 1500. Just, he had that kind of ability, but blazing speed, no. But I was always impressed by Mike.
That's great. Did you interact with any of the other athletes from, say, any of the Soviet bloc nations or anything like that?
To a certain extent. Yeah, I remember, of course, that was when we were in Moscow, and I was in 67. Yeah, that was the time I traded it. Nylon swimsuit for a camera. The Soviets in the late 60s didn't have nylon.
Wow.
They had wool swimsuits. So they were just, you know, love getting a hold of our equipment. It was kind of interesting to see. They had wool sweatsuits, too. They didn't have the stretch nylon.
Wow. Wow, that's what were your impressions of like the East Germans or the Soviets?
Can you put me on hold for a minute here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay.
My family just walked in, and they're going to go off to the Chinese garden.
That's fine. Okay, we were talking about interacting with any of the Soviet bloc countries or interactions with them or what your impressions were.
You know, they were great. You had no problem with them. And I don't remember the East Germans. For those two Olympic games that I was in, the major competition tended to come from your own teammates. It was tougher to get into the finals of the Olympic trials in this country than the finals of the Olympic Games.
Wow.
So, especially in 64, you know, if we didn't sweep an event in 64, we weren't doing our job. In 68, we didn't do as well as that, but we were still, you know, head and shoulders better than anybody else. I think we probably had more swimming medals than everybody else combined, but, you know, I'm not absolutely sure about that. I don't remember having any kind of difficulties, problems, or, you know, untoward interactions with any of the Soviets. They were just people. And, you know, they were competitors, and, yeah, they wanted to win. But that was everybody.
Absolutely. Did you have any interactions with any of the women athletes at the Olympics?
Not much more than, you know, casual dinners at the dining hall. I never dated anybody.
Actually, I was more because the 68 games was the first time they did gender testing and basically testing for banned substances and things like that. That's what I'm leading you into. I wasn't particularly talking about your dating life.
Yeah, well, it was non-existent. So.
You were there to compete, obviously. Do you have any recollections about the testing for drug testing, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember getting tested.
Yeah.
Somebody had to be standing in the room next to you while you urinated into a cup. I remember one of the guys couldn't do it. He had a kind of a bashful bladder. Felt bad for him.
Yes, sir. Were you aware of anyone getting banned or anything like that? Like the Swedish pentathlete, the games got popped for doping. Did you hear at the time, or was it no big deal? Completely off your radar.
Completely off my radar.
Yeah.
I was not aware of anybody who did any kind of drugs whatsoever, be it steroids or blood doping, at all.
Right.
Never offered to me. I never went looking for it. It hadn't even occurred to me. So, completely off my radar would have to be the way to describe it.
Absolutely. Did you hear about Smith and Carlos, the Black Power salute during the medal ceremony at the time?
Well, that was hard to miss. I can understand what they were doing. The Olympics are always political, which I think is unfortunate. But the reality of it is everybody does the medal counts. Everybody's national prestige depends on stuff like that. And here were some of the athletes turning the tables and using it for their own political grandstanding. And, you know, and at the time I thought it was sort of unfortunate that they did that, but, you know, I could understand them seizing the tool for their platform at the time. And nobody was harmed by it. They made their point. And, you know, I thought it was kind of unfortunate they did, but I also really didn't object much.
Right, absolutely. And over time, has your thoughts about that changed at all?
No, not really.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that the nonviolent approach has gone away.
Yes, sir.
72 games with the terrorists, you know, that our naivety went completely away with that episode.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. What were your impressions of the media and the media coverage during the Olympics?
You know, I barely noticed them. I didn't read any papers. I wasn't concerned about that. I mean, I was there firsthand. Why should I bother looking at the results in the paper? You know, those were the days where reporters did more reporting and less analyzing. So I don't remember being impressed one way or another by them.
Right. You got your first gold medal in this in the relays. How was that experience?
Well, you know, there's nothing like winning a gold medal at the Olympics. One of the high points of my life.
Yes, sir.
So probably even higher was winning the silver medal in the 64 games. That was my own individual medal.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I can see that. Where did you go to any other events, or did you just hang out at the pool, or did you see any of the other part of the games?
We went to a few things. You know, before we swam or competed in anything, they kind of discouraged us from, you know, getting out and about. And we had our workout schedules, and they didn't really want us tiring ourselves out. I mean, literally, by, you know, doing too many other things. You know, and I think that was much more related to things like swimming or track, as opposed to, you know, some of the other sports that didn't require quite as much better physical exertion. So, and after, yeah, I went through a few things.
Yeah. Did you have much time after your last event and the closing ceremonies? Was there much time? Or
I didn't have much time.
Yeah.
You know, the games were about roughly 2 weeks. I was swimming 7 hours of those 14 days. And I think I had 2 or 3 days at the end. So I didn't get to do much, no.
Yeah, that's stupid. Did you get to participate in the closing ceremonies?
Yes.
Great. Did you like that? Was that a different experience than the opening ceremony, since you were no longer nervous?
It was a lot more fun. I still remember, I think there were half a dozen guys from the Italian team. The Italians had these beautiful tan suits. I mean, our parade uniforms were kind of dowdy.
Yeah.
At any rate, so these guys, they looked like they were Armani suits or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there were half a dozen of them. They had they were walking single file in step, and they had their right hand on the shoulder in front of the guy in front of them, and over their left arm carried the way a waiter would carry it for their trousers. And they made an entire circuit of the Olympic Stadium like that.
Outstanding. That's quite an impression.
That was hysterical. You know, he was just milling around and watching the fireworks, and it was over, and he could relax.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get to call home and everything else and talk to your parents about what had happened?
Oh yeah.
Great.
That was much easier to do in Japan. Though. We used telegrams.
Oh wow.
In Japan, much more. We used the phone more, but calling them more than once every several days was pretty hard. So they were, I suspect, glued to the newspaper and to the television.
Right. Absolutely. Right after the games, what was your life like?
Well, I took the semester off, as we talked about before, and I went back for the spring term. And by that time I spent off, I worked for the Swimming Hall of Fame in Fort Lauderdale. It was just getting started at the time. Yeah, I did a whole bunch of things like, you know, painting boards, getting photos together and filing. Buck Dawson was the guy who was the director at the time. And he loved having me there. You know, I could say, we've got our resident Olympian. You know, I spent a few months just doing that. It was kind of fun. It was low-key.
Absolutely. What was your reception like going home?
You know, it was like getting a ticker tape parade, for God's sake. You know, people arguing about whether my hometown was Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach, or Lighthouse Point. You know, I mean, I was kind of astonished by the fact that anybody was that interested.
That's great. So you took the whole semester, then you went back to Yale the following semester, correct?
Correct.
Did you were you still swimming?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you how long did you keep swimming past the 68 Olympics?
Until I graduated from college, I still swam until then. Then it was time to get a real job. I see these things, I get these things in the mail about helping to mainstream Olympic athletes. And, you know, times have really changed. I mean, anybody with a grain of common sense has to know that that's going to come to a screeching halt. And you need to plan ahead for that. And, you know, the way these mailers and whatnot read is, you know, they haven't planned for it. And I don't quite understand that, because everybody knew that unless you were in a sport like basketball or something that's going to offer you a career, you had to get a real job.
Yes, sir. when did it was your senior year that you decided that you were going to continue on and go to med school, correct?
Correct.
Cool. Where'd you go to med school?
New York University.
Outstanding.
That's a private school. It's not a state school.
Yes, sir. That's pretty impressive. I didn't find out what your specialty was, Doc. What did you do your residency and eventually your career?
Well, I did internal medicine. I did radiology, and then I practiced emergency medicine for 30 years.
Wow, outstanding. Do you still practice today, or are you retired?
I retired.
Okay.
You know, if I didn't have to do night shift, I'd probably still be practicing. I work for Kaiser, and seniority doesn't get you off nights for Kaiser.
Ah.
And I found that I still felt terrible 2 days after a night shift. You know, I used to be able to bounce back in 12 hours when I was in my 30s and 40s. By the time I reached my late 50s, it was harder and harder.
Yes, sir. I can see that, definitely. Do you still swim or anything like that? I mean, to work out or?
No, I cycle and ski. I found it very difficult to do something I can only get worse at.
I can absolutely see that, and I really understand that, actually. Who's your biggest influence throughout your athletic career, do you feel?
My father.
Your father. Outstanding. If you didn't get into swimming and competing, do you think your life would have turned out differently?
Well, I'm sure, but I can't imagine not competing. Maybe I wouldn't have been a swimmer, but I suspect I would have found something to compete in that would have been my sole focus.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What about your reflections on amateurism, quote unquote amateurism of like Olympic sports and things? What are your thoughts of your experiences or feelings? How if you think it's changed quite a bit since what your games?
Oh, it's changed enormously. I know people are sponsored now, even if their payments are deferred, they are supported at the time. You know, we, back in the 60s, didn't have any options except, you know, coming up with our own meals and travel expenses, and that's not true now. So even people that are, you know, quote amateurs, unquote, now, really aren't. I think that if that sort of thing had existed when I was swimming, I might have been able to prolong my career. But that sort of, you know, Spitz got the first real contract, you know, from Schick.
Yes, sir.
Back in 72. And, you know, that wasn't available to any of us. And, you know, do I think that changes the sport terribly? No, I really don't. I'm a little envious. I sure would have liked to have had some of that myself. But, you know, the biggest thing I ever got was a suit and a towel from Speedo. And, you know, they go down at the Nationals, and Bill Lee was the guy who was the Speedo rep. And every time, at every final at the Nationals, he'd go down and put a Speedo towel and a Speedo suit on the block or behind the block for whoever made it to the finals. I remember at one point I had something like 22 Speedos. That was it.
What kind of advice could you give for Olympic hopefuls?
That the single most important thing is desire. If you want it badly enough, you may actually get it.
I think that's outstanding. Looking back, do you think there's any special significance about the 68 games or compare the difference between Tokyo and Mexico City? What are your reflections looking back at the two games?
What is a reference point?
Well, the 68 games were you know, the first for a lot of things. You know, it was the height of the Cold War, and there was gender testing. You know, the and substance testing. There was, you know, the riots. There was that massacre that happened in Mexico City. Of course, like you alluded to, 72 games is where I think our innocence was shattered a bit with the terrorists that went on there. However, as you look back, compare and contrast maybe your impressions of the games. Were they was Tokyo better than Mexico City? Do you think Mexico City were a better put on games? Or just reflections?
Well, as far as, you know, the actual mechanics of running it, I think the Tokyo games were run much better. Everything was on time, clockwork, everything was clean, polished, in perfect condition, and the that was kind of far from the way Mexico was run. You know, there's a little truth to Manana, and things weren't run anywhere as well. You know, maybe it's my own personal obsessive compulsive personality that makes me like, you know, running things on time.
Yes, sir.
So that, you know, I can, you know, expect to be on the blocks when they say, and because there's a certain edge that you kind of develop or build before competition, and a stall in that is never particularly good. So, you know, from that point of view, I thought the 64 games were a much better run. Was it admirable to have a third world country, which Mexico was at the time, running the games? Well, yeah, I think it was. Would I have preferred to be in Munich? Probably. Except for what happened. But,
yes, sir.
I would have probably preferred the German or the Japanese approach to scheduling than the Mexican. One thing, they used the exact same templates for the medals in 64 and 68. And if you put them side by side, it's obvious which ones came from Mexico. And that kind of epitomizes it for me.
Oh, really? That's interesting. That's interesting. No one that I know of has said that. That's interesting. Were there surprising similarities other than that that come to your mind?
Well, you know, the Olympics are the Olympics. The similarities are that everybody was there to compete. That it was, you know, the world stage, and it was going to be the biggest competition of most people's lives there. So that was certainly similar, and I don't think that's changed now.
Yes, sir. Do you have any other reflections or anything else on the games or being an Olympian? I mean, do you go to any of the reunions or anything else now?
Well, I went to the one reunion, and that was a lot of fun. And I had tentatively planned to go to the one in Austin, but we had months ago kind of arranged to spend a week at the Shakespearean Festival and then to go down to Northern California to the Redwoods, and I was already committed to that after I go.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Do you have anything else that you want to share with hopeful Olympians or anything else on any other reflections of this your Olympic experience?
You know, I don't think I have any specific. You know, you mentioned one thing I was thinking about earlier is that you're talking about people that I was particularly close to.
Yes, sir.
And I didn't mention Pam Cruz because we swam together before that, so I didn't, you know, it's not like I met Pam and became close to her at the Olympics. We were very close before that. She and I would swim together at the old casino pool. Bob Osley really bent over backward for us. He would take time out from his day to go spend 2 hours with the two of us at the old casino pool.
Wow.
And Pam and I swam together for a couple of years like that, so we were actually very close. And for the last reunion, it was great to see her again. Kind of lost track of her.
Wow.
But that was a very nice thing. You know, I didn't bring that up because that antedated the Olympics for me.
Right. Absolutely. No, I'm glad you shared that. Anything else that you want to tell our audience or anything else, Doc?
You know, offhand, no.
Okay. Well, do you have any questions for me?
I hope you get your graduate degree out of this.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just helping with the project. Actually, it's Dr. Hunt's project, and I'm just helping out. Yes, sir. I want to thank you very much for the generous gift of your time, Doctor.
My pleasure.
And thank you for sharing your memories and recollections with us. I think it's outstanding.
Thanks.